Hello, good evening, and welcome. I am Samuel Trapp. This is Damn Radio that you are listening to, and my show is International Flavor. Very glad that you're here, and I want to make sure that you're aware. Okay, I am recording this show. This is not... It's kind of funny because it is a live show. But if you're listening to this during the 4 o'clock hour in Missouri, this is actually last night's live show, which is recorded at 9 p.m. I'm trying to figure out how to make sure that people know about this and know what I'm attempting to do. And I am attempting to change my show from 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. daily to 9 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. And I'm also changing the days. So currently, I go Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. to 5:30. The new time for my show will be 9 p.m. to 10:30, Sunday through Thursday. And I am doing this. So if you're listening right now and it's in the 9 o'clock hour or between 9 p.m. and 10:30, then feel free to call in at 573-746-8020 and I shall take your call. But if you're listening to the show during the regular time of 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m., Monday through Friday, then don't call in because you will not be answered. And you're listening to things that were recorded the night before. So the time of this recording is 10 p.m., thereabouts, on April the 22nd. And so now I'm creating something new. You are certainly permitted to listen to the show on Damn Radio. I like that. I want you to listen to the show on Damn Radio. But what I also would like is for you can go to the live video stream on my YouTube channel, which is International Flavor Dash English. No spaces, no nothing, just International Flavor Dash English. And you will see the live stream. Then you can log in to the show that way. If people are calling in, that is quite easy to hear them. If you are coming in to the video platform on YouTube, you will be able to comment and just place comments in writing like you would do on a Facebook post or something, or like you would do on any other YouTube video. But you can also click on the link that you can see in the video down below, and that link will allow you to participate in the show with me live. And, you know, we could talk and have kind of a TV program at the same time. So that is what I am attempting to accomplish here. And it went very well last night. The last two nights. I did it Sunday night and I did it Monday night. And now it is Tuesday night and I'm doing it again. And it is turning out pretty well. The sound quality is good. It's allowed to go to both, but I haven't had a lot of calls. Haven't had any calls, in fact. It's just been me doing what I normally do, going through all of the topics that I wish to discuss and going through them. Last night during the show, I mentioned 9/11, a report that I've been following on 9/11. And what I would like to do about that report. I talked about my brother and when we were living in Qatar. Now he's a go-getter. This is a heavy-hitting brother that I have. He's very, very gifted, I would say, and he's a very smart individual. And he, I forgot, I can't remember who he worked for, which is depressing, but he's worked for some pretty big names in his career, and he's done some very incredible things he has done. And he understands politics, and he understands some stuff. Whatever he is willing to tell us, he and I in Qatar, we were both basically away from our wives at the time, and we spent a lot of time chatting, going out to eat, discussing politics. Some of my favorite times was discussing politics with him and discussing conspiracy theories, and he is very, very gifted in these. And now let's see if I can get this correct. He has agreed to come on to the show on Wednesday night, which means Wednesday night between 9 o'clock and 10:30, you could call in or you could listen live between 9 and 10:30 and listen to my brother who I told him what my topic was. I asked him to review some of the stuff that we had discussed previously regarding 9/11. I sent him an article. He said he was working on some things in that regard anyway. And we almost got sidetracked into talking about it. We talked 15, 20 minutes about it, and I finally stopped. I was like, wait. We need to stop this engrossing conversation. Because I just want to hear it fresh from you when you join the show. And he has agreed to join the show tomorrow night. And my true hope is that he will join me. He's a busy man. He still works for he's an upper level muckety muck. And that's a very important title to have, high level muckety muck for a conglomerate of a massive. Remember that one from? Do you remember what was that show with the huge company? And it was just called Massive Dynamic, and it was a show with I don't even remember any of the actors, but I liked it. It's a very good show, and I can't remember it, but it's something like that. You know, the made up names from the. There was a board game called Dallas based on the show Dallas, and we had a copy when we were kids, and they had all these big made up companies, huge airline, stuff like that, and large oil field, Massive Dynamic. My brother is a senior level muckety muck in Massive Dynamic. And anyway, I'll let him tell you as much or as little about himself as he sees fit. But he has agreed to participate in the show. If you're listening to this right now, between 4 p.m. and 5:30 on the 23rd, the show that is going to be with my brother will be Wednesday night, the 23rd, between 9 and 10:30. And I will allow him to talk as long as he would like. People can phone in and chat with him. He will be on with me if we can figure out how to pair all the phones together and merge calls and do all of that. It could be a rather entertaining show. And I hope that we can figure it out. And I'm very much looking forward to it and to have him on. Now, if it doesn't work, he will be back because he is my brother. And he will come at some point. And I've always found him to be extremely interesting. And he's a good guy on top of that. And so he is quite smart and, a gifted individual. And so at any rate, enough about all of that. That will be for tomorrow's show. So tonight's show, this is again, April the 22nd at 9 p.m. A little bit after 9:09 p.m. right now, and we have an hour and 20 minutes to go. I took a lot of notes on some things I wanted to talk about today. There are several shows that I wanted to get to and play, and I'm going to experiment because I really want them to be heard on my, in addition to being heard on my audio through damn radio, I do want it to be heard on the audio portion of my video. So, I am about to play an video, but I'm going to do it and hope that it is certainly audio, that I can hear it. I'm still playing a little bit with some of the technology, so we are running experiments here while we're at it, and I hope you don't mind that too much. But while we're swapping, this is there aren't many people listening to me at 9 o'clock anyway, because nobody knows that I am here. And not yet. And so we will make sure to repair that problem. Wait a second. Wait just a cotton picking minute. I'm having trouble logging in. That's part of the trouble with having two computers running, one doing the video and another one doing the audio. So it's kind of entertaining to go through that. So we're going to turn down the audio for now and get to some of these shows that I wanted to put out for you tonight. And let's see here. I had a bit of a history and I have some playlists, and I want to get to one of them without playing yet, and see, when I want to make sure that everything is all set up. So sorry to talk you through all that stuff. I'm more talking myself through it to make sure that I have it done correctly and that it is audio that you can hear here. There have been some horror story audio that has been coming our way that I want you to hear. And one of these stories is called, and I already watched it, it's called Zelensky is Becoming Enemy Number One. And it's really troubling. Now, I tell you about these stories fairly frequently, and I want to make sure that that you understand where I'm coming through these. Shocking footage reveals Ukraine's dark mobilization tactics. Fathers are threatened with removal of their children from their custody. Civilians are beaten in public, and detainees are tortured in makeshift chambers. As Zelensky's draft push escalates, growing unrest suggests that Kyiv may be waging war not just on Russia, but on its very own people. Now, with the video that I'm watching, which you can find, is called Zelensky Becomes the Enemy Within. Ukrainians are beaten and tortured in a ruthless draft crackdown. Comes from Times Now World, or TN World, and you can go and watch this video. It's a 5-minute video, some of it in Ukrainian, but I think in the first part, I think, is translated well. The part that isn't translated, I shall read for you, and let's make sure that we all hear what is coming on from this in the very beginning. Here we go. So basically, there's a minivan in the middle of the street, and on one side of it is a guy standing near the driver's door, and his kid is standing behind him. And a guy in camouflage fatigues has a military-grade weapon, a rifle, pointed at them. And they keep hiding behind the car and keep doing it. There's somebody filming it from way up above, like it was in an apartment building, and these people were down below. And there's people standing in the street, and all the screaming you hear is people saying, hey, you can't do this. And the guy's wearing the fatigues and an orange vest, you know, the standard issue for a mobilization dude in Ukraine of what's going on there. And so as it goes on, you will you hear shots fired, and then a group of people come and tackle the guy. So here goes.
A Kalashnikov cocked at a father and child. Military recruiters storming gyms, threatening men with the loss of their parental rights. The war for Ukraine's survival has taken an internal turn, and it's growing darker. These are not scenes from a dystopian screenplay. They're real incidents emerging from present-day Ukraine, where a desperate drive for manpower is pushing the state's mobilization machine into increasingly coercive and, in some cases, brutal territory. One viral clip shows Ukrainian recruitment officers confronting a father, walking with his young son. As tensions escalated, an officer pointed a rifle at the pair until shocked bystanders stepped in and beat the recruiters. An act many saw as the public's breaking point in a long growing resentment toward forced conscription. Another disturbing encounter shared by Sputnik International unfolded inside a gym, where recruiters cornered a man. When he resisted, they didn't argue. They threatened him with a chilling choice: surrender his documents or lose custody of his child.
Потому що він три місяці мене забрав. То есть вы меня заберете от моего сейчас ребенка?
Нет, мы заберем вас разом с вашей дитиной, а дитину передам до специальной службы.
То есть вы пришли в зал, начинаете меня забирать от моего ребенка.
Мы вас забираем, я перебил. А чего вы решили, что мы вас забираем?
Потому что в январе месяце меня забрали.
Чем это закончилось?
Меня отпустили, все. До свидания. Я не знаю. Я не проходил ВЛК.
Вы отказались проходить ВЛК. Мы должны просто за вас сейчас понять. Вот и все. Никаких проблем нет. Почему мы должны вас сразу забрать?
Вы уже угрожаете. Вы сказали, ребенка передадите.
Если вы ваши документы, вас будет затримано и доставлено до відділку поліції разом с вашей дитиной. Мы с вами по-нормальному говорим.
Это ненормально. Это ненормально. Я хочу жене, чтобы жена забрала ребенка. Да? Хочу этого.
Вас будет затримано.
Это уже не важно. Мне главное, чтобы ребенок пришел со своей мамой.
Я залишусь тут с вашими детьми.
Как это?
The exchange, verified by multiple sources, sparked outrage among civilians and rights advocates who accused authorities of weaponizing fatherhood to plug the army's mounting personnel gaps. That resistance isn't isolated. According to Kyiv Independent, nearly 6 million Ukrainian men have not updated their records with enlistment centers, many without legal grounds for exemption, highlighting the depth of the public's unwillingness to be drafted. Yet the push continues. In one of the most harrowing revelations, a video released by the State Bureau of Investigation exposed conditions inside the Poltava pre-trial detention center, revealing just how far recruitment enforcement may have gone. Investigators reportedly uncovered a torture chamber within the facility's medical unit. There, detainees, accused of disobedience, complaints, or non-cooperation, were tied to metal beds for days, denied food, water, and access to a toilet.
Yeah, how do you like that? So the video of this is terrible. And if you can watch it, like I said, Zelensky becomes the enemy within, shows Ukrainians beaten, tortured in a ruthless draft crackdown by PN World, Times Now World. And it's a disgusting video. And it's unbelievable, you know, what they're made to put through. You got to see some of the pictures.
The methods, officials believe, were used to break the spirit of resistance. Ukrainian authorities have not officially commented on the Poltava footage. But the mounting incidents paint a stark picture of a military recruitment system less focused on legality than survival. As Ukraine's front line thins and its battlefield toll climbs, the nation's most dangerous clash may no longer be with Russian troops, but with its own citizens, increasingly unwilling to be conscripted into silence.
That is quite troubling to me when watching a video like that. It's just not right. Hold on, we're gonna take that down just a little bit because we don't want to play that just yet. And there's a few similar videos that I wanted to play for you. The next one is 8 minutes long, and it is called Mass Surrender Filmed. And this is unbelievable. It's where are we on the Mass Surrender film? Damn it, why does it driving me crazy? Stop it. I think I quit there. See if we can get this to the right one. So this is a mass surrender filmed, and it's same place, Times Now World. And mass surrender filmed, Ukrainian soldiers drop their weapons, mercenaries are fleeing, and Kyiv picks up 900-plus dead soldiers, dead troops. Now, this was 4 days ago. This one came out, and it's got tons and tons of commentary on it. That is just unbelievable, watching some of these. And, you know, I got to give a few kudos. I complain a lot about YouTube and how they block me and how they block other people in there. There was a guy that got a hold of me today on one of my videos that I posted on my Russian version of my channel. And he's like, oh, I haven't seen you in so long. Well, that's because I'm blocked by YouTube, and my stories have not been able to go to Russia. Now, Russia also, starting late last fall, wasn't helping YouTube. Now, I've noticed that it's getting quite a bit, more accessible, getting a better, I don't know what, things are showing better on there. And I don't know. I want to believe that they are trying to correct all the bad politicization of everything that has gone on over the past 3 years, and in fact much longer than that. Because if you believe the mainstream, the blocking, the cancellation of opinion and things like of that nature, well, then, you know, more power to you, but I believe you're wrong. If you don't believe that's going on, you should check into a reality center somewhere and see if you can't have a reality check while you're at it. because it's not right what they're doing to people. Okay, like I said, this one is Ukrainian troops are surrendering en masse amid chaos, forced conscription, suicidal frontline tactics, while some soldiers recount being dragged off the streets and denied medical exemption. Others detail being abandoned by their own commanders. Foreign mercenaries flee. Nearly 1,000 bodies return home, and Kiev's war effort is crumbling. Now, I've been saying it's crumbling for a while, but sometimes it's better not to hear it just from Samuel. You need to hear it from other folks. So we're going to play this clip for you. I believe we're going to listen to it all. It's about 8 minutes long. And let us begin at the beginning.
Dragged into battle with barely a warning and no answers from superiors, a group of Ukrainian armed forces soldiers found themselves surrendering to Russian troops in the Kursk region. Far from the homes where many of them had been forcibly enlisted. The Russian ministry of Defense released footage this week showing Ukrainian prisoners of war describing how they were conscripted from the streets and pushed into frontline combat with no regard for their health or preparedness.
I tell you what, there isn't a guy in this photo that is a young man, and they're conscripting well past middle age. These guys are not young men. A lot of them are bald. They're all, you know, just regular people in Ukraine. And remember, I've told you quite a few times, the average age of a conscriptee, of a soldier, of an army person, of a military person in Ukraine is 47 years old. Okay? And so it's sad but true.
One soldier recounted that he was detained outside his home and taken to the military enlistment office under the pretext of updating his records. Despite medical issues, he was declared fit for combat. Prokopeshin suffered burns during a battle after a fire broke out in a barn. When his group encountered Russian forces in a destroyed house, they dropped their weapons and surrendered. We were caught on the street right next to the house.
We were taken to the military commissariat to check and update the data. They didn't pay attention to the disease. They wrote everything down. After the battle, there was a fire in the shed. And the forest was really burned down.
We saw Russian soldiers in one of the destroyed houses.
We put our weapons down and surrendered.
We were treated well.
They really helped us because the forest was really burned down. They gave us cream to put on our wounds.
They gave us tea. They gave us food. Another prisoner detailed our command's positions behind the front lines, forbade in retreat. Effectively condemning the forward troops to die in place. According to the Russian Ministry of Defense, soldiers who surrendered were provided first aid and humane treatment. Ukraine's increasing desperate strategy on the front lines involves deploying poorly trained and ill-equipped conscripts into what are often referred to as meter soldiers. Frontal attack with little strategic value and high casualties. Facing such grim prospects, many Ukrainian soldiers, including Korean officers, are either fleeing the battlefield or surrendering to Russian forces to avoid certain death. Vyacheslav Pogibenko, another captured soldier, offered a glimpse into the confusion within the Ukrainian ranks.
At a meeting, he was told they would follow the 80th and 82nd Assault Brigades to the Sudja Ring Road. When he asked for clarification, the battalion commander simply replied, "I don't know."
I was at a meeting of my kind, and we were told that we are going to take positions on the Sumskaya Road behind the 80th and 82nd Assault Brigade. The only question I asked was, what's next? Why there, and what's next? What didn't the battalion commander answer me? Then I saw the battalion commander for the second time in my life. I didn't know anyone from the officers, but I asked such a question. What's next? What didn't the battalion commander answer me? I don't know. That was the battalion commander's answer.
On another front.
By the way, that was a pretty poorly translated. What the guy was saying. They answered it in double negatives and basically saying. But what he asked was, what was he telling me? He was telling me, I don't know. And they said, what was he not telling me? He was telling me, I don't know. And kind of backwards, but I think he get it.
Russian assault units stormed a fortified building near Krasnogorovka, held by Ukrainian troops and a Mexican mercenary. The assault platoon commander, speaking to Sputnik, said, the foreigner fled at the start of the clash. Abandoned by their leader, the remaining Ukrainian soldiers refused to surrender and were ultimately killed. Only one was captured alive.
There were mercenaries at the Krasnogorovka shooting range. As a rule, the oldest of the mercenaries was in one of the houses. They held a position there. It turns out that the oldest of them was a Mexican. And, it turns out, five servicemen. The oldest of them was there. We couldn't take this house for a long time. Then when we took it, this Mexican ran away, and the other prisoners refused to surrender. They were destroyed, and one was taken prisoner. The mercenaries come here in the hope that they will have a sweet life here. After they come across us, we reprimand a couple of people from their group, and they immediately start running away.
On the northern edge of Chasov Yar, troops from the Russian Sever-V Brigade cornered a Ukrainian unit hiding in the basement of a partially collapsed building. Believing they remained undetected, the trapped soldiers declined to surrender, except for one, who emerged with his hands up after Russian troops offered a chance to live. Minutes later, an FPV drone strike obliterated the structure. Amid these frontline tragedies, Ukraine's coordination headquarters for the treatment of POWs announced the repatriation of 909 soldiers' bodies on April 18th. The bodies were recovered from battle zones including Kurakov, Pokrovsk, Bakhmut, Vuhledar, Luhansk, Zaporizhia, Sumy, and Kharkiv, as well as from morgues in Russian-held territories. The operation was carried out with the help of the Security Service of Ukraine, SBU, Interior Ministry, and Ombudsman's Office. Ukrainian authorities thanked the International Committee of the Red Cross for its assistance in the operation, emphasizing that the fallen deserved dignified burials as mandated under the Geneva Conventions. For those left alive and trapped by failing logistics, unclear orders, and lack of leadership, surrender no longer signals betrayal. It is a final, desperate plea to survive.
I think that's it. It is. That's the end of that one. And isn't that terrible? What they're going through in there? It's called Times Now World, and you can see some of those. I have one more, which is also from Times Now World, just to give you an idea of what's going on over there. And I'm going to turn it down here while I get it prepped. And this one is it's a little on the loud side. So this one is Akhmat forces intercept a deadly Ukrainian infiltration during Easter. captured POWs who now expose Kiev's betrayal and chaotic commands. Kadyrov releases shocking footage showing a surrendered soldier confessing how Ukraine just sent him to die. And, you know, things are not looking good there. And so we're going to begin at the beginning here. Let us see.
Easter bloodshed returned to the Russia-Ukraine front line, cracking the illusion of ceasefire once more. Just a day after Chechen leader Ramzan Kadyrov accused Ukrainian forces of violating the truce, another grim dispatch followed. A video of a captured Ukrainian soldier recounting a failed infiltration deep into Russian-held territory. The latest video, again shared by Kadyrov, details an attempted Ukrainian incursion into the Gopterovka area in Russia's Kursk region. The assault reportedly resulted in casualties and multiple Ukrainian troops falling into Russian hands. Kadyrov's Telegram post, titled "The Our Prisoners" section, attributed the Ukrainian soldiers' capture to the joint efforts of the Kashtana and Petersky detachments of the Akhmat Special Forces, supported by the 15th Tank Brigade under Russia's Ministry of Defense. The Chechen leader accused Kyiv of deliberately ignoring the Easter ceasefire declared by Russian President Vladimir Putin, describing the operation as a serious omission that cost many lives. The attackers, he claimed, moved without any announcement or regard for the truce. Three sabotage groups, each composed of five Ukrainian fighters, reportedly attempted to cross into Russian territory. Russian forces, particularly Akhmat units stationed in the area, intercepted the intruders. Some were killed during clashes, while others were taken captive.
Of the three groups that tried to cross the line of combat contact, the first five, which entered, were accompanied by scouts. Three scouts from the 130th Brigade. In short, there were two remaining in this five. One is a fighter of the 225th Brigade. He came out of prison a month ago. He is already in captivity. Another fighter was from the 221st Brigade. Then two more fighters from the next five tried to help them when they were destroyed in the rear battle. And this one was taken prisoner. In the end, these two who came were also destroyed.
Among the captured was Roman, a serviceman from Ukraine's 225th Brigade. In conversation with Abdi Aloudinov, commander of Akhmat forces, Roman disclosed that he had been released from prison just a month earlier. His team, he said, had been dispatched under vague and cryptic orders in the middle of the night.
We didn't know where. We were told to follow the bird. It was at 1 a.m. We landed, sat down, sat in the bushes. It dawned in the morning and we realized that we were in your territory. Everyone was taken. Everyone was taken. More than half of them were taken. I started to go to my side and went to your position. I realized that it was better to surrender, because life is life.
Kadyrov claimed Ukrainian scouts from the 130th Brigade had accompanied the first wave. As the operation unraveled, subsequent groups tried to provide cover or rescue their comrades, only to be neutralized or captured themselves. The rest joined the long list of prisoners of war, Kadyrov wrote. The Chechen leader used the failed raid to slam Ukrainian command for what he characterized as the reckless use of ill-informed troops. People who are completely alien to the concepts of honor and dignity cannot be trusted at their word, he remarked in his Telegram post. Akhmat commander, Abdi Alaudinov, delivered his own fiery rebuke, singling out Ukraine's 225th Brigade with a scornful moniker. He accused Ukrainian forces of exploiting the truce and playing on Russia's religious sentiments while sacrificing their own men.
I call the 225th Brigade the Rooster Brigade. There are no roosters for you. I don't know what you believe in and what you imagine, but you are roosters for us. We are not going to give you the opportunity to play on our feelings, on our faith in God, on the fact that the commander-in-chief gave instructions, and you decided to lay down a bunch of your guys today.
Alaudinov didn't stop at tactical criticism. He questioned the very purpose of Ukraine's resistance, warning that the country's identity itself was slipping away. His tone shifted from mockery to what he framed as pity for Ukrainian soldiers, whom he described as being caught like dogs.
But you don't need to fight with Russia, in my opinion. There is no point. Because you are already ending up, I don't know, as an identity, the Ukrainians will soon be over. We even feel sorry for the Ukrainians, because you are put in packs. You are being caught like dogs. Therefore, hello to the 225th Rooster Brigade, from the commander of the Special Capture, General Laudinov. Of course, I'm not at all a fan of saying hello to roosters, but the fact is that this is sarcasm. I hope you heard me.
With rhetoric reaching new levels of disdain, Akhmat forces sent a chilling message. Ceasefires may be temporary, but violations could have permanent consequences. For those who ignore truces, the battlefield offers no mercy, only to death or capture. As the Orthodox holiday fades into memory, what remains is not peace, but the harsh arithmetic of war, casualties, captives, and a deepening distrust.
Isn't that terrible? So basically, their Abdi Alaudinov is the commander of the Special Forces Brigade or division, I think it is, that took back over the Kursk region, and it's been a pretty bad set of battles up there. He's also the guy that, if I recall, was in charge of that. A bunch of special forces soldiers crawling approximately 9 miles through the gas pipelines and coming up in Kursk behind the Ukrainian forces and taking them out. And so he is commander special forces in the Northern Division, and they think very highly of him. And he puts on a good show, you know, when you talk to him, and he is. I haven't played a lot of those videos for you, but I watch a good number of them. And as it gets more and more clear, I mean, it's always been clear to me, but as the rest of the world finally starts to acknowledge that Ukraine is not going to win, is not winning this war, I think I should play some more. You know, I kind of tried to at least stay, you know, central, middle of the road, but there's nothing left middle of the road. Ukrainians are being slaughtered. You know, it's not good. And the best thing we could do for them, this is really going to sound terrible. Best thing we could do for them is cut them off. They have a leader who isn't listening to anything, a leader who's still living in fantasy land. And, believes that Donald Trump is going to come and send American soldiers over there to save his butt. And nobody cares about his butt. You know, it's that's true. You know, nobody gives a rip about Zelensky over here. He's got his crew of deep state people on the Democrat side and on the neocon side, ready to, you know, spend another 10 years worth of our U.S. treasure to I don't know what, to continue to, and it really is pissing it away. You know, sorry to be so rude about that or nasty, but that's what's happening, is they are pissing that money away, and there is nothing worthwhile there. You know, there was one more that Russia allegedly, and this was an 8-minute video as well, that said that they were doing what would you call it, I guess? I don't know. They were sending out, what are the names of them? Well, I'll have them here. Oreshnik, I think. No, not a rationing. This is a different one. But they're sending out another high caliber supersonic missile, and they have been taking these high tech attacks even further. So this is called Russia unleashes high tech ballistic weapons onto Ukraine's vital areas. This one is put out by a group called Military Gear. On April 6, Ukraine was rocked by a large-scale missile assault involving KH-101 cruise missiles called Kalibr and the deadly Iskander-M ballistic systems. With attacks launched from multiple directions, critical infrastructure was hit. You know what? I knew this was coming from earlier. I'm not going to play this one just because it's a little bit old and I have some other things I wanted to get to today. But if you get a chance, go back and review some of these. Military Gear is a good channel to have. The other one was the Times Now World that is, tell you what, they're a pretty darn interesting. Let's see. I want to get to my stories of the day. Yesterday, I promised to read you a couple of things that were opinion pieces that had come up. One that I talked about was, and I do want to get to this today, there's two of them. One of them, Germany wants UK to hold its hand while it starts World War III. The other one is what it means to be white in America. And remember, these are written in, by foreign, non-US journalists that they have their own points of view of America and what it means to be an American and all of that. And so it's entertaining sometimes to get their points of view. But before I get to those, I already got you the Zelensky becoming the enemy from within. Now, I heard something on JR's show earlier today, and remember, it's the 22nd for me. It's the evening of the 22nd. And so not his 23rd show, but his 22nd show, if you want to go back and listen to what he had to say. I've enjoyed his show. And he either played somebody or he said it himself, talking about due process for illegals and the ruling that just came out that said, in the middle of the night, they halted these flights, buses, whatever it was, getting rid of criminals that have criminal offenses that are being deported for criminal offenses, and the Supreme Court is stopping them all, saying that they're going to be entitled to all kinds of hearings as they go through. Now, I'm going to personalize this because everybody knows my thoughts on some of the completely BS procedure that comes about and has especially been used against me, on especially on the nature of due process. So get this. Here's I'm upset about this, and but I want to give you a point. So I'm saying that these criminals that have killed people, raped people, I don't know what, assaulted people, I don't know, sexually molested young children, you know, that all kinds of, you pick it, what they have done. They have done all kinds of stuff. And they aren't citizens, and yet they are entitled to due process. Which, by the way, I was not given. I was not afforded due process. I was not allowed to confront people who made dastardly claims against me. And the Supreme Court of the United States did absolutely nothing about it. They didn't even read my petition to have it reviewed. Meanwhile, people that are being kicked out of the country can just make some questionable, some dubious, send a dubious piece of paper by the ACLU to say, oh, geez, these poor people are being treated poorly. Yeah? I wish I could. I asked those a-holes to do something on my behalf. And, oh, no, we don't get into those sorts of licensing issues. Okay? If I was, if what was alleged against me had happened to me as a broker, if somebody had made an allegation against me as a broker, I would have gotten a hearing. I would have gotten the ability to confront witnesses. I would have gotten the ability to have a lawyer present. I would have got the right to an appeal. I would have gotten all kinds of things. And it would have been a statute, a law, a an executive branch regulation, something that I was allegedly alleged to have violated. Okay? Not so with the Missouri Bar Client Security Fund. There are no, it is not a regulation. It was not handed down by the executive branch. There is no rule, the Supreme Court rule. Supreme Court can make all kinds of rules if it wants to, but it hasn't made that a rule, and there is no rule. And the legislature has, in Missouri at least, has chosen not to memorialize any sort of procedure having to do with the licensing of attorneys into a statute, like they do in a lot of other states, by the way. 90%, far more than that, of other states, they may have a similar process, but those processes are codified. Those processes are legislated, or those processes are rules-based. Not so in Missouri. In Missouri, it's complete BS, and they have done, they don't do anything. It's a bunch of guys get together, assign themselves as a committee, and assign their friends to that committee, and then they go out and target lawyers they don't like. And they target them, and they solicit their prior clients, send them letters, and say, hey, we got a pot of money if you'll make a complaint against this guy. And if you send out 100 letters, how many people you think you're going to get to come forward and say, I want some money? Somebody sends me a letter, and there's, you know, and I know that somebody's offering to give it back. Hell, why not? Why wouldn't you say yes? So these people do. Meanwhile, I don't get to mount a defense. I don't get to have an attorney present. I don't get to do any of those things. I've fought this since 2015. Now, I would say 2014. And just so you don't think that I'm anti, you know, my punishment, or that I'm trying to say I didn't do anything wrong, I did do some administrative things wrong. I didn't rob my clients. I didn't take a penny from nobody. And what I was accused of was taking my client's property. I didn't take my client's property. I took my client's mother's property. And that is permitted. Okay? It's completely legal in the state of Missouri to take your client's mother's property. You can do it to guarantee payment of your legal fees. That's allowed. You can't take your client's property. Well, unless you're, you know, Greg Williams, and I have nothing against Greg Williams. I frankly like the guy. But he did it. He actually did it. And they didn't do anything to him. You know, he got a letter of reprimand. There was a guy down in Springfield who didn't even bother to have a trust account. I was punished for completely nonsensical small things. And that is the truth. And it's just nonsense that these people are allowed due process, and I can't even get anyone to think about my case. They destroyed my very life, the government, and I'm a U.S. citizen. I was born in Cincinnati. And nope. All kinds of rules for those people, but nothing, excuse me, choked myself to death, nothing for Samuel Edward Von Trapp, as JR likes to call me. By the way, my brother joining us tomorrow night, his name is Matthew Von Trapp. We'll get into that a little bit, just so you know when I speak to him tomorrow, because he is, as again, I'm going to tell you, because I wanted to report this twice in the show, or three times, even at the end, so that you know, we are changing my show from the 4 o'clock hour to the 9 o'clock hour for the start time. And so this show is pre-recorded on April the 22nd. I'm recorded from 9 until 10:30. And if you're listening to it on the 4 o'clock to 5:30 slot on Wednesday the 23rd, then please don't call in, because no one's going to answer your call because it's a recording. Okay, so don't do that. And but if trying to keep you know, playing games with time machines here, I am alerting you to the show, which will be Wednesday night, April the 23rd, beginning at 9 p.m. I have invited my brother to join along. He had a kind of a club when we lived in Qatar together, kind of an intellectual club, a discussion club, and it would be held in his, let's see if I remember the word for him, majlis, I believe is the word. A majlis is a room when you walk into someone's villa on right, left side that has the low Arabic couches, and it's for the men to get together and have chats. People don't necessarily get invited into the interior of someone's home. So you have a guest room for meeting people immediately when you walk in. And so we would meet in that room. And we only did it, I only did it a few times. I think he did it pretty regularly. And the topic that was there a couple of times that I did show up had to do with 9/11. And he had some, at the time, very much conspiracy theory, and I would say to him that I thought it was, I was a believer that I'm not so much a believer anymore. And I asked him to come along because in the last couple of weeks, there have been what's his name? Is it Ron Johnson that has sent out an article, was interviewed by someone, and said that he wants everyone to release all of the information about what really went on in 9/11. And my brother has done quite a bit of research on that. And he had some amazing stories to tell me then. And I listened to them because I was very interested. He and I spent a lot of time chatting. I think I already said this part early in the show. But I'm hopeful that that you will like it as much as I do, but you will. I mean, he's very, very well versed in all kinds of things. You know, he was a helicopter pilot in the army, was in Iraq, I think 1 and 2. We'll have to see. I can't remember. But he's got a lot of life experience, a lot of corporate experience, very intelligent, gifted young man, I can call him because he's younger than me. And I think you'll enjoy listening to him. He's a very good guy. And so I do hope that you listen in and pay attention, because he's got some interesting stories, and I'm hoping to get him to come more than once on the program because he's got a lot to offer on a lot of different topics. And so we'll see what happens tomorrow night. I'm just going to wind him up, and hopefully he will dazzle us all and go from there. At any rate, I wanted to raise my concerns about this due process stuff. I don't want to say that I don't understand what is going on with these criminal illegal aliens, but I'm not so sure that a full court is doing that. These judges are not your friend. These judges have been around too long. These judges, I think, need to be swapped out far more frequently than they are, and they should not be able to mold a country in the way that they are. There's got to be larger checks, especially on the judiciary branch, who is just runs amok. And by the way, unchecked, nobody checks them. If anybody's going to check them, it'll be Donald Trump. And the only way to check them is to not do what they're going to say. What are they going to do? Seriously, what are they going to do? Direct the executive branch to arrest them? Find some friendly Democratic prosecutor to arrest them? And then have Trump pardon them all? You know, what are we going to do? I mean, seriously, what sort of power would the judicial branch have? They can stand around and talk all the time, but, they're not going to be able to enforce anything. What are they going to do? Send out their bailiffs? Send out a group of bailiffs? They're armed, you know, most of the time on the federal level. What are they going to do? Send them out to round up errant executive branch officials? I don't think so. What are they going to do? Go, oh, gee, I've created an order. And then the president goes, well, that order I decline to enforce. Here comes the army. Hell, Zelensky does it all the time. You know, do I want us to have a third world country? What do I want to obey the, what do you want to call it, the rule of law? I want to do it if it's something reasonable. But it seems more and more that it's less and less reasonable. And that is very much distressing and depressing to me, because it really shouldn't be that way. And the sad truth is that it is. And I just don't like it. I don't know. Let's see if we can get to a couple of those articles I was talking about. I want to start out with there's a new article on the Pope opinion piece. There's what it means to be white in America, which I wish to talk about. And then the Germany wanting the UK to hold its hand. Since we've been on the theme of war most of the day today, let's get there again. The Chancellor in waiting says he, and I mentioned this last night, but I didn't read it for you or let you know what it is. It's articles by Rachel Marsden. Chancellor in waiting says he would commit to giving Kiev long-range missiles if London backs him. I think this is BS. Okay, Germany, and I'm most of this article I certainly agree with. Okay. Germany's Chancellor-in-Waiting, Friedrich Merz, doesn't officially take office until May 6th. But that hasn't stopped him from hitting the press circuit like it's demolition day. Apparently, he's got some lost time and infrastructure to make up for. In a chat with Germany's public broadcaster ARD, he floated the idea that Kiev, which seems to rank higher than Berlin on his own priority list, needs to get ahead of the situation on the battlefield and shape events instead of playing defense. The event he seems most eager to shape? Oh, Third World War, apparently, because he's pivoted straight to the Kerch Bridge. That's the bridge between Russia's mainland and the Crimean Peninsula. The mainland lifeline to Crimean Peninsula, like it's been living on borrowed time. Here's his quote. If, for example, the most important land connection between Russia and Crimea is destroyed, or if something happens on Crimea itself, where most of the Russian military logistics are located, then that would be an opportunity to bring this country strategically back into the picture, finally. Oh, this is commentary. Cool, cool. Which picture would that be exactly? The one labeled catastrophic misjudgments of the 21st century? Probably, which is why Merz needs to use Which is why Merz needs a useful idiot to ride shotgun alongside him in the Doltmobile to share in any responsibility for the eventual mayhem when things inevitably go pear-shaped. You rang, say the Brits, or at least that's what Merz is hoping, they say. Our European partners are already supplying cruise missiles, Merz said in an interview. The British are doing it. French are doing it, and the Americans are doing it. Anyway, this must be jointly agreed. And if it's agreed, then Germany should take part. Guy's an idiot. Merz follows Christian Democratic Party MPs. Floating the idea of to the Western press that he's waiting for official for official permission slip from London. It would probably read something like this. Dear Herr Friedrich, you are hereby authorized to partake in a highly coordinated, militarized pub crawl. First stop, a punch-up with Russia, followed by a wobbly march to a greasy spoon for black coffee, bad lighting, and a collective hangover. Oh, wunderbar. Merz is just days away from grabbing the wheel, and he's done pretending to be the guy in the back seat yelling directions at Chancellor Scholz. Scholz, for his part, has always said that Germany wouldn't hand Kiev to Taurus long-range missiles. Not that he had much wiggle room after last year's leaked audio from Russian intelligence of German Air Force brass workshopping ways to hit the Kerch Bridge without leaving any German fingerprints. Kind of a bad look for a guy who keeps overtly declaring that he wants peace. So naturally he was furious, which is why, if Team Scholz suddenly turned around now and said, you know what? Let's try a few long-range missile strikes, just for funsies. People might reasonably assume that he'd undergone a surprise lobotomy with a NATO letter opener. As the coalition partners for Merz's incoming government, Scholz's Social Democrat support would be needed on any vote. So far, they show no interest in greenlighting his World War III passion project. You know, democracy and all that. Minor hiccup, I know. If military ambition and musings alone were all it took, Merz would already be well on his way to having a Netflix original named after him, and maybe even a seat with his name on it waiting at The Hague. But hey, hear the guy out. What if it's like a group project? Das ist gut, ja? Nah, dude, nicht gut at all. And what exactly does Team Merz think this would look like? Would the Brits and Germans sit side by side, fingers hovering over their respective missile buttons, doing a tense little 1-2-3 fire, and just praying that neither one flinches at the last second, leaves the other one with some very awkward phone calls to make? If so, that would certainly explain why they're talking specifically about needing Britain's non-negotiable participation and not France. The country that trained a flagship brigade for the Ukrainian army, who apparently learned how to bail out before even seeing action. Paris hailed it as a unique initiative, reported France 24, training 1,700 Ukrainians in France to fight, who then just end up surrendering, and at the local cafe prior to deployment is unique, all right. Britain isn't exactly a great choice for a wingman either. if only because it says that its own participation in Ukraine is contingent upon Washington holding its hand. Europe must play its role, and I'm prepared to consider committing British forces on the ground alongside others if there's a lasting peace agreement, but there must be U.S. backstop, said British Prime Minister Keir Starmer in February. So for those keeping score at home, for deeper involvement in Ukraine, Merz would need the Brits. The Brits would need Washington. And what does Washington need? For them all to knock it off. But apparently that memo got lost in the inbox among all the World War fantasy fiction. Pentagon figures recently questioned one ally about why it was still supplying weapons to Ukraine, a challenge that was ignored, The Economist reported on April 15th. Diplomats in Washington also report that some Trump aides say privately that they are fed up with Europe's effort to strengthen Ukraine. Doesn't sound like Team Trump is up for holding hands as part of the West's human chain in its reckless playground games against Russia. Red Rover, send Putin right over. It's hard to believe that there was a time not too long ago that Germany wasn't trusted with sharp knives, like nuclear weapons. Oh wait, it still isn't. Technically, the Bundeswehr is still supposed to be defense only, but Merz seems determined to assemble just enough multilateral handholding to justify pulling out the long knives, the 500-kilometer long ones, to be precise. If this is the new leadership model, then someone better put all the launch codes in a childproof box. I enjoyed that article, and I hope that you did as well. Again, that article was entitled Germany Wants the UK to Hold Its Hand While It Starts World War III by Rachel Marsden, a columnist. Why can't I speak? A columnist, political strategist, and host of independently produced talk shows in French and English. You can find out more about her at rachelmarsden.com. And quite interesting. There you have it. There was one other, well, maybe even two others that I wanted to read. But I tell you what, this Merz is not a picnic for in the Ukrainians aren't going to like, well, the world isn't going to like what happens if he gets his way and wants to send Taurus missiles to Ukraine to bomb the interior of Russia. Allegedly, the U.S. isn't allowing Ukraine to use any of the attack guns or anything into the deep of Russia any longer. And they never should have. Britain, so remember, my big issue with all of these missiles being passed on to Ukraine is Ukraine isn't capable of firing the missiles. The missiles must be targeted using U.S. or British or German targeting data. Now, depending on which one it is, Storm Shadows get the British targeting. The French version, I forget what it is, gets French targeting, and the alleged Taurus missiles that may be given to Ukraine cannot be targeted by Ukrainians. They have to be targeted by the military intelligence. If you can, geez, what a oxymoron that is, with the military intelligence assets of the Germans. And so, you know, that's my issue with this. Putin is absolutely right, as is Lavrov and as is Zakharova, as is Peskov, when they say that these people are at war against us on their own because we know Ukraine cannot fire these weapons on their own. They don't have the security clearance to get the American ones. And if we're giving Ukrainians security clearance, that's nonsense. I want to tell you a little bit about security clearances because I keep hearing this. JR said something about it on his show here on Tuesday. Remember, you're hearing the show on Wednesday afternoon at 4 o'clock if you're not listening to it at the 9 o'clock on April 22nd. If you're not listening to it then you're hearing it on the 23rd. And I'm talking about JR's show on the 22nd, because I'm actually doing this show live on the 22nd at 9 to 10:30 p.m. Missouri time. And talking about security clearances, JR was talking about somebody getting their clearances terminated and yanked. And I always wondered, the rule is, as soon, even if you're still in the military, even if you still have a security clearance and you still work in the government, as soon as you no longer need it, it is removed. You are taken off, okay? So I had a top secret U.S. government clearance with SCI access. I had, you know, I had a high one. Had to have one to work on the Nevada nuclear test site. Had to have one to escort Soviet and Russian diplomats inside the United States or in Europe, or when I was on an inspection team in Russia. Had to have one. And or I couldn't do my job. But as soon as I didn't need it anymore, it was lifted. It was gone. And they were very protective of those things, being in the wrong hands. So what are these people? Like, Hillary Clinton hasn't been in office forever, and she still had an active clearance? It should have been revoked. Nonsense for her to still have one. And that is not the rules, but of course, the rules only apply to certain people. You know, if you are there licking the right rear end, boy, you'll just, you know, you can keep that going on forever. Even if you're stealing computers, putting top secret information in your Corvette, in your garage, all kinds of good stuff. Those things need to be taken away at the end. There ain't no reason Obama should have one. No reason at all. What, so he can make more money on his talk show circuit? You know, heck, give me access then. I'll go start a talk show circuit, you know, see if I make some money spreading my great knowledge of current events at the Pentagon. Nonsensical nonsense. Let's see here. I want to get back to my other article that I was going to discuss with you. And let's see. But before I do that, I wanted to make sure one more time to tell everyone as we near toward the end of the show that this is not a live show. This show is, well, it is right now, and it's a live show on April the 22nd in the evening. It is a live show, and it is also going to be aired on the 23rd during the typical time period, the typical time slot of 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. And if you're listening to that, which I hope you are, then that's just fantabulous. And I would like for you to continue to do so. So, but I'm changing the show from what happened to my show here? Something happened weird. I don't know what I did. I sure hope that I haven't screwed anything up. Let's see. There it is. Okay. I want to make sure that everything is still going appropriately here. And apparently I pushed, a bit of a wrong button. But everything seems to be going just fine. Well, I had one more article I wanted to go through with you. And I actually had two. And then, well, there's another new one on the Pope. But we'll get to that opinion piece tomorrow, because I wanted to get to this. What it means to be white in America. And this was this one is by Constantine von Hofmeister, who's a political and cultural commentator from Germany. He's author of the book Multipolarity and the book Esoteric Trumpism, and editor-in-chief at Arctos Publishing. Okay? To be white in America is to inherit a name shaped by migration, faith, and forgotten histories. It is a lineage carried across oceans, passed through lullabies, and rooted in both cathedrals and cornfields. This identity lingers in quiet rural churches where the voice of ancestors seem to echo in the trees. For many, white becomes a stand-in when older names fade, when American feels like a hollow label on a billboard. It is not about shame or dominance. It's about memory, continuity, and being quietly aware of where you came from. Multiculturalism, as it manifests now, behaves like a solvent. It dissolves the distinct, merges the sacred into sameness, smiles as it rubs out the texture of rooted lives. Within this flood, those who carry European memory find themselves drifting, searching for a foothold. The word white is that foothold. It holds meaning through resistance, through memory, through the fierce dignity of cultural continuity. Identity, in this sense, becomes a form of love. Love for origins, love for inherited stories, love for those yet to come. Supremacism speaks in the language of domination. Identity speaks in the language of presence. The white American who awakens to his name does not seek a throne. He seeks a hearth. He seeks a way to stay whole in a world that rewards fragmentation. This is a path of loyalty to one's kind, never hostility towards others. In the garden of peoples, each flower flourishes with its own fragrance. Ethno-pluralism offers an architecture of difference, a choreography of coexistence, where each cultural rhythm retains its beat without drowning the others. The term white in the American lexicon carries a unique frequency. It vibrates with Jefferson's quill and box organ, with frontier hymns and Viennese waltzes, with cavalry horns and Celtic chants. To call oneself white in this context is to protect this frequency from dissonance disguised as inclusion. It is to declare, without aggression, that the old songs deserve to be sung. Memory deserves air. Tradition deserves breath. Identity deserves more than footnotes in someone else's anthology. European nationalists who peer across the Atlantic may see a racial label where a cultural signal flares. In America, this signal reaches through the noise, calling for cohesion in the absence of nationhood. The immigrant once became American through absorption into defined mythos. That mythos no longer exists. White now fills the vacuum with a new mode of belonging, fused from ancestral fragments, reconstructed into a postmodern tribe bound by shared affinity rather than state-sponsored creed. This tribe seeks kinship, not conquest. The word itself, white, is undergoing alchemy, once used carelessly, once wielded cruelly, now reclaimed with care. It becomes a sanctuary word, a quiet defiance against vanishing. It shields neither empire nor empire building. It cradles only memory. Those who say the word do so with reverence, tracing maps invisible to those who only see skin. Within this word lives the village, the chapel bell, the grandmother's eyes. To be white, then, is to feel time coiling through your veins, to hold the sacred burden of continuity with both hands. Identity here acts as a compass, never a cage. It points to something essential, never reductive. Within its frame, new expressions rise: art, ritual, story, space. The future emerges from the past, remixed through intention rather than accident. Each person who reclaims identity becomes a steward. Each community that honors its inheritance becomes a lighthouse. In a haze of cultural disintegration, the glow of remembrance shines stronger than shame. Authentic diversity, when anchored in respect, requires difference. And difference requires selfhood.
To be pro-white is to be pro-identity. To affirm one's people is to affirm all peoples. The line between celebration and supremacism is one of spirit, not volume. This spirit seeks harmony, not hierarchy. A world without distinct identities offers only the cold hum of managed sameness. A world of living cultures brims with meaning, so let this be said clearly. The affirmation of white identity, grounded in respect, carried with humility, lit by ancestral fire, serves not as a threat, but as a promise to remain, to remember, to reimagine. I like that. This article was first published on Constantine von Hofmeister's Substack, which is called Eurosiberia.net. And, you know, well written. I like it. Now, I want to point out that I am of the point of view that every culture, every race, every breed, every, I don't know what, language has its own beauty and its own, there is nothing wrong with honoring your culture, where you came from. Nothing. There's nothing that says to be the same means we have to forget where we came from. You don't forget where you came from. You honor where you came from. Whether you came from the back mountain hillbilly Kentucky or West Virginia or the Ozarks, or you come from the big city, you have your own background, your own race, where you were from. And if you're white, that means mostly you came from European roots, maybe Arabic, maybe North African, you know, maybe places like that where white culture has been prevalent forever. And, you know, this is not to put down anything else. It's just to honor where you came from. I don't see why that is a bad thing. I am tired, frankly, of the term supremacism or the whites think they're superior to everyone. I think there may have been an element of truth in that, you know, years and years ago. I think that some people always think they're better than everybody else, and it don't matter what color they are. There are people who are always going to think they're better than everyone. And, you know, I don't believe that about white people. I don't believe there's a white advantage, you know. I believe there may have been at some point, but I also believe that opportunity plays for everyone. At any rate, I'm Samuel Trapp. One last time, I'm going to tell you that this show, if you're listening to it on the 23rd, was not live. I am switching to the 9 p.m. hour, between 9 p.m. and 10:30 Missouri time, Sunday through Thursday. And for the 2 week period, beginning with Sunday the 20th, I have started taking the show, recording the show the night before. And that will stop in 2 weeks, and I will only have the 9 o'clock show. So I want to every day make sure that everyone knows that what I am trying to do. I appreciate you. Appreciate you listening. Appreciate you having the show. Please listen tomorrow night. Well, I guess it would be tonight, the 23rd, Wednesday at 9:15. I have my brother joining us for some interesting topics related to 9/11 and some other conspiracy theories. And I very much hope you join us in. Thank you so very much. And each and every one of you have a very nice day.